The grace, mercy, and peace of the triune God be with you.
Also with you.
So we're in the middle of a series looking at wisdom and other traditions. We've looked at Judaism and Islam, and this morning we are taking a peek at Buddhism. And I really mean we are just turning up the corner of the curtain ever so slightly on Buddhism, okay? We're not exploring Buddhism in all of its forms. That would be a huge, long sermon series and way beyond the gifts of this particular preacher. But we are lifting up some features of Buddhism and other traditions that challenge us, that deepen our faith. I'm sure some of you know the story of Siddhartha Gautama, who was born in Nepal in the 6th century BCE. His story opens like a Disney fairy tale, right? I mean, the prince in the palace who had it all. Power, wealth, security, a big choir. I'm sure he had a big choir. And his father, who was fiercely protective of him, never let him leave the palace. Well, one day, he decides to make some trips outside the palace, and he saw suffering firsthand, and he's shaken. And so began the most earth-shattering midlife crisis in history. Siddhartha left home in search of the truth about human existence. And after 6 years of wandering, he sat cross-legged under the Bo tree, and awakening came upon him. And he saw deeply into the impermanence of the world and the causes of suffering and death. From that moment on, he was the Buddha, the awakened one. However, rather than entering into the blessedness of nirvana, he turned back to the world of suffering. And he offered enlightenment and liberation in a ministry that lasted almost 50 years. It's a remarkable story. And so the root of Buddhist teaching, I guess you could say, is a kind of psychological awakening, right? And what I hear as a Christian that jolts me like a clap of thunder is that while I spend a great deal of my time on the outer life, on activity, I mean, just look at the announcements that are in the bulletin, right? I mean, there's all kinds of activities going on. I spend precious little time on the inner life. Protestants and Methodists in particular are so focused on action and getting stuff done. If you want to get something done, ask a Methodist, right? I mean, we almost called this project around here, although it didn't really fit the character of the church, we were going to call it Get Her Done, because that's how we are as Methodists. So sometimes we struggle with spiritual practices, right? And talking about the inner life. We struggle in worship with offering times of silence and stillness. You don't get silent in the worship service and you're looking at your bulletin like, what are we doing? Where's Lisa? Who's leading the service? What's going on? We have trouble with silence. And so if you have kind of irregular devotions in your home life and spasmodic prayers, if you are one of those who might be gathered with a circle of friends and the offer is made, who will return thanks, and you find yourself looking at your shoes, welcome. Welcome. This is your support group, right? My name is John, and I've tried to start a regular centering prayer practice for 30 years. Hi, John. Thank you. Okay, hi, John. Yeah. Okay, there's my group. Yeah. Just so that we don't wallow so much in a lot of Protestant guilt over all of this, there are reasons for it. And the short version is this, that Protestants basically threw out the bathwater in the Reformation. In a well-intentioned effort to focus on the Bible alone, on Scripture alone, deep wells of spiritual practice and mystical devotion were jettisoned from the faith. We began to privilege doing things over being. And the truth that we have found over the subsequent centuries is that we need both. We need action and we need contemplation. You know, progressive Christians have embraced the bumper sticker. Perhaps you've seen it. If you want peace, work for justice. That could be the bumper sticker for this church, right? Buddhists would counter with this. If you want peace, be peace. Maybe you've seen that. Now, I don't think that these bumper stickers are mutually exclusive. Buddhists remind us that what we bring into our movements of peace and justice in terms of our own ego, right, and our own needs, those things are not insignificant. Martin Luther King Jr. knew this when he led marches. And he asked those who were unable to be nonviolent to sit the march out. He would say, if you can't stay peaceful in this march today, when they turn the fire hoses on you, then you need to stay back at the church and pray. So there's a connection between that inner peace and peacemaking. I really believe that those deep spiritual wells in our tradition were rediscovered most recently in our encounters and in our dialogues with Buddhism over the last 50 or 60 years. We came into contact with this massive contemplative tradition, and we knew immediately this is something that we are missing, and so we began to look back into our own deep wells. And so as I take my Buddhist bucket, and I dip it into the Christian well, here are a couple of things that I come up with. When we say, this is the day the Lord has made in worship, or when we say, give us this day our daily bread, what I hear is this day. This day. Now, the Buddha was once asked, what do you Buddhist monks practice? And he replied, we sit, we walk, and we eat. The questioner said, but everybody does that. And the Buddha said, okay, when we sit, we know we are sitting. When we walk, we know we are walking. And when we eat, we know we are eating. By the way, do you know what you're doing right now? Sitting. You're worshiping, right? Pay attention, people. That's the theme of the day, really. Pay attention. When I receive this day as a gift from God, I begin to give attention to everything around me. And I'm able to offer my attention to others, which these days, when you offer your attention to someone else, that is a huge gift, right? When I receive the day by paying attention, that is a challenge for me. Some of my staff may have noticed that I'm easily distracted by almost anything. Is that a cell phone that just went off? Do you don't have a cell phone? I'm just kidding. Yet I'm aware that when I show up, when I am fully present, there are depths and there are layers that emerge that I wouldn't have missed for the world. Our new bishop, Robert Schnese, is an avid bird watcher, and I've been out birding with him several times, and I am always amazed at what I see when I am out with Robert. We'll be out walking, and he will stop, and he'll set down his scope and say, John, come here, take a look at this. And way off in a tree is this beautiful bird that I don't even know how he sees it, because Robert has had like a lot of eye surgery. Some eye issues, and my eyes are fine, but he can pick these things out and then put the scope on them, and without his guidance, I mean, I would have missed the bird. And okay, at one level, yeah, it's just a bird in a tree, okay, I understand that, but I wonder if there isn't a deeper connection in those moments when we're aware with all that is healing and refreshing and wondrous. When we're awake to everything around us. I wonder. Theologian Paul Nitter recently recently wrote a pretty good book. It's called Without Buddha, I Could Not Be a Christian. Without Buddha, I Could Not Be a Christian. Intriguing title. He writes pretty openly about his struggles with traditional Christianity. He grew up in the Roman Catholic Church and went on into the priesthood. And he talks about the ways that his encounters with Buddhism actually have clarified and deepened his commitment to Christ. Nitter struggles, for example, with the traditions of prayer that he's grown up with. And I don't know, maybe you do too. I struggle with them at times. I love the Sunday liturgy. But during the week, I find that words and prayers get in the way for me, and that I most fully connect with the divine in prayers without words. Like centering prayer. Anybody know anything about that? Centering prayer is part of that great contemplative reawakening in our time. Do you know that there are corporations that are hiring contemplatives to be in their companies? Do you know that there are corporations that are adopting contemplative practices, not necessarily centering prayer, in their companies? Isn't that interesting? Yeah. I wish there was time to teach centering prayer this morning. There really isn't. There are all kinds of resources out there, and here at University Church, we have our very own centering prayer guru, Jan Reed. If you just wave your hand, Jan. Okay. What I love about centering prayer is that it goes straight to the heart. It's a practice that allows us to let go of stuff, to just let go of the day, let go of the concerns and the worries and the Facebook posts and the emails, and just let all of that stuff go. It's a dying to self. It is the dying to self. It's a way to practice that dying to self that Jesus talked about. And in Buddhism, it's letting go of the false self in order to experience the true self. There's an old story that's told about two monks who were on a pilgrimage, and they're just walking, and they come to a river. And the river is overflowing its banks and flowing quite quickly, and there is a woman stopped at the river. And she asks the monks if one of the monks will, if they'll help her get across the river because she's afraid. Well, the monks have taken a vow not ever to touch a woman. And so one of the monks just goes on across the river to the other side. And the other monk stops, picks the woman up, carries her across the river, and sets her down on the other side. They begin back on their pilgrimage, and the first monk says, "I cannot believe that you picked up that woman. We have taken a vow, brother. I was there at your ordination when you took vows, and you said, I don't know what kind of a monk you are. Apparently, you don't know anything about life." And this went on for hour after hour after hour as they were on their journey. And finally, the second monk just stopped in his tracks, and he said, "I set down that woman 2 hours ago. When are you going to set her down?" Let him go. Let him go. At University Church, we teach centering prayer for all ages. And in fact, it's a regular part of Vacation Church Camp here in the summertime. One of my favorite stories about centering prayer comes from our children. And I probably have the details scrambled, but I think it came in a Facebook post or an email several years ago. So it was summertime, and a mom had to run some quick errands to the store, and so she left her two preteens at home alone, right? And when she came back, they reported that they had gotten into a fight while she was gone about something. Well, mom tried to be calm and cool and say, "Okay, so what happened?" And they said, "We were arguing, and we decided that we needed to go to our rooms and do centering prayer for 20 minutes. And when we came out, we were fine." Seriously, this happened. Now, I can't promise you that if you do centering prayer, those kinds of things will happen. But I can promise you this: if you never step back from the rush and the hurry of life into stillness at some point, into silence, stuff like that will probably never happen. So we can learn a lot of things about other religious traditions. But we can also learn from them. I believe we can become better Christians, better people, by really listening to our Jewish and Muslim and Buddhist friends. And so my question for you today to take with you is, what are you learning? What are you learning? What wisdom are you taking home these days?